Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Friday, August 14th, 2015. Marchers reminded racism has never gone away. Lyra Evans grew up in the South during the Jim Crow era, unable to use certain water fountains or eat in some restaurants. Even after she became a teacher, one day her principal called her gal, which she considered a racial slur. "Some say racism reared its ugly head," she said. "I say it never dropped its head. It's time for us to stand up for justice and equality." Evans was the keynote speaker at the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People Journey for Justice rally on Thursday. The group met at a Community Church of God and walked together to Trinity CME Church for the rally. The Journey for Justice is sponsored by the National NAACP and will include weekly events on the topics of education, criminal justice, and the Voting Rights Act until September 15th, the date of Advocacy Day. The group will meet at 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th at Trinity, 444 South Webster Street for the next event. Evans said injustice that happens to one person happens to all, and it's everyone's duty to stand against it. "The big question tonight is, are we willing to come out of our comfort zone?" she said. "I don't like confrontation. I come from the South, but when an incident happened to a friend, I knew I had to stand by her." "Save the protests for actual injustice," she said, citing the recent protests by a Decatur group while the Decatur City Council was considering a replacement for Mayor Mike McElroy after his sudden death. The council is poised to name Mayor Pro Tem Julia Moore Wolf mayor. "The council followed protocol and the law when it did," she said, "and if the group had done its research, it would have known that." For students, of whom several were present, she said kids need clear expectations and immediate, fair, and equal consequences of misbehavior. "A quality education," she said, "is dependent on a level playing field, but the kids need to do their part," and she called African-American males, especially noting that the majority of discipline referrals in schools are theirs. "Don't let inappropriate behavior get you caught up in the school-to-prison pipeline," she said. "You also need to let your children know that killing each other on the street destroys all our forefathers fought for." Deborah Ford, who is the Decatur branch's chair for education, said she is tired of getting phone calls about fights. "Remember, your actions have consequences," she said. "I know you don't want somebody hitting on you. If you have a problem, call a parent or an adult. Let them have that verbal confrontation for you. Parents, read the handbook, read the calendar, update your contact information. Get active in your child's school." K through 9 program gets approval from County Board. The Macon County Board has gone to the dogs. The board voted unanimously during its monthly meeting Thursday to set up a 2-year pilot program to create a training facility for the K-9 units and their officers. The program is paid for through a $188,931 donation from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. "We cannot thank them enough for their support," said Chairman Kevin Greenfield, Republican Decatur. Donations will allow for the hiring of a recently retired city police officer to provide courses in canine certification. It would cover the two instructors' salaries and benefits over the 2 years. 6 dogs and 6 handlers will be in each course, with 5 courses per year. Sheriff's office officials are hopeful that the program can become self-funded if police and sheriff's officers across the state make the county a destination to get their dogs certified. Certification for canine handling would require an 8-week course. In other business, the board voted unanimously on an agreement between the County Clerk's Office and Library Systems LLC for election supplies and voter registration system on a monthly basis, on top of covering vital records and other programming systems. County Clerk Steve Bean said the two have been in an agreement for several years, with new contract covering a 48-month period starting in December. The county clerk will pay $16,325 a month to Library Systems LLC, with an extra $1,510 a month for the Access Library license to cover the programming systems. Thursday was a fairly quiet meeting of the board, but it felt a little felt a bit like the calm before the storm, as several board members spent the 15 minutes of the meeting telling others to prepare for more activity as a plan to build a wind farm in northern Macon County makes its way through the county's committee system. "I want you to be prepared for our meeting next month," Greenfield told board members. "Make sure you're read up on what's happened. We don't want to be here all night." Blue Mound Festival, a century of tradition. Not much has changed at the Blue Mound Festival in 105 years, and that's fine by its residents. Every year they know those who no longer live in the village will return for a weekend of family fun. They know to save their quarters for bingo cards, and it's a fact that the First Christian Church has the best ice cream because it's homemade. This is all about bringing people back. "We have a class doing their 50th reunion," Diana Ritter said. Tom and Diana Ritter are the co-presidents of the festival this year, and they have a lot lined up, including a parade, carnival, car show, and a memorial run in its 25th year. "We tried to do something special for that," Diana Ritter said. The festival's theme, Race to the Fall Festival, is based around the Danny R. Byard Memorial 5K and 1 Mile Fun Run. Byard was an avid runner, local teacher, and Vietnam veteran who died suddenly. "He was a major fixture in this community," Tom Ritter said. In honor of the anniversary, race director Tom Jones is collecting gently used shoes, preferably sneakers, for the Souls for Shoes anti-poverty nonprofit. "We've got over 100 pairs right now," Jones said Thursday. The goal is to collect 1,100, one for each Blue Mound resident, throughout the festival. In November, Jones will deliver them to the agency, which will distribute them in the U.S. and abroad. "We have been so humbled by it, and as many years as it's been," his widow, Ann Blyard, said. The Meridian Middle School building, formerly the Blue Mound High School, will be open 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday for a final tour. After students move into a new building in Macon later this year, the middle school will be torn down. "We have a lot of interest in that," said Diana Ritter, an alumna herself. "Once the doors open, the stories will flow." Bingo will start every night and go until the very end. The cards are only a quarter each, and the prizes get better the longer people play. Tour de Paz pedals for Pair of Causes. An annual family-friendly bicycle event to benefit the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation and Scoville Zoo is ready for its fourth year. Tour de Paz is scheduled for Saturday at Nelson Park, and bicyclists can choose from 25, 43, or 61-mile rides or participate in a free route along the Nelson Park lakefront. This year, there will be tandem bikes and quadricycles available to ride for a donation along the lakefront family fun ride route. Entry fees range from $30 to $200, with the larger packages including a variety of items such as customized cycling jerseys. Children 12 and younger ride for free, and Tour de Paz bicycle license plates will be provided to all kids who ride. "It's just a lot of fun, and it's for a really good cause," said Shirley Stanley, president of the foundation. Aside from the bicycling, visitors will be able to see a demonstration from the Macon County K-9 unit on explosives detection, agility, obedience, and land and water retrieval. In addition, the Scoville Mobile Zoo and adoptable dogs from the animal shelter will be at the park. All proceeds for the event are split between the foundation and the Scoville Zoo, and the event will be volunteer-driven. "This means that every cent that is raised goes toward every animal in the community," Stanley said. The zoo is currently raising money for its penguin and otter exhibits, while the foundation is raising money toward its ongoing goal to enhance the quality of life for shelter animals. The Beach House Restaurant and Cherry Berry are partnering on lunch that will be served from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Meal tickets for non-riders are $9, but meals are included in registration fees for bicyclists. Music jogs memories for Imodin dementia patients. It's hard for Rita Ropp to recall names and faces anymore, but when she hears music, her memory starts to come back, and it's enough to make her dance. About half of the residents at Imodin Creek Skilled Nursing Facility have some type of dementia. Ropp is one of them, but when a pair of headphones is gently placed over her ears and music from her generation starts to play, she starts to move. "She's the perfect person for it," her daughter Linda Ropp Brilli said. "It just fits her spirits. Whenever she hears music, she tries dancing." The Music and Memories program is new at Imodin Creek, but already staff and family members have seen encouraging responses from clients with Alzheimer's disease. Seeing my residents and what it does with Rita is so wonderful, Activity Director Robin Luna said. Once a day, she pulls out a box holding the 5 small iPods and decades of music. Luna clips the portable music player on to patients, turns up the volume, and waits. Toes start tapping and smiles appear. 5 minutes later, Luna hits the pause and asks what the music makes them think of, and clients who were previously mute are able to respond. It triggers a portion of their brain that brings back memories, Luna said. It also helps reduce anxiety and behavioral issues. Luna has been dreaming about setting up a music program like this for years. We've both seen a lot of research in regards to the positive responses and results from that type of interaction, Imodin Creek Administrator Molly Carpenter said. When listening to familiar music, unresponsive or ornery residents would start clapping their hands and smiling. Carpenter remembers that years ago a resident's wife would bring in a CD player to play music for her husband, and there was this nonverbal resident with those headphones on, he would be mouthing the words, she said. They hosted a fundraising dinner for the families and raised enough money to buy 5 colorful iPad shuffles and headphones. More than Luna had expected. One family even donated an iPod they weren't using. Staff began interviewing clients and their family members to learn their music preferences. Each iPod was loaded with a specific genre of music, including country and western, rock and roll, big band, swing, jazz, and religious. At this point, I know who likes what, Luna said. Music and Memory is a national nonprofit organization aimed at providing quality of life in the elderly through music technology. The 2014 documentary, Alive Inside, shows its positive effect using music to tap into the right lobe or creative side of the brain. The Southern Illinois University School of Medicine started its own branch of Music and Memory last year at its Center for Alzheimer's Disease and Related Disorders in Springfield. Carpenter said she wished they'd done the personalized music program sooner. It's a disease with so many mysteries to it, Carpenter said. So if we can tap into something that's going to bring positive results, there's no reason not to. Big Brothers Sisters Make a Splash with a Pool Party. It was a pool party, seemingly like any other. Children played loud games of Marco Polo and grown men did belly flops off the diving board. But underneath the fun Wednesday night, Fairview Park Pool was a deeper purpose. For years, Big Brothers Big Sisters of Macon County has bid summer farewell at its back-to-school pool party. Some schools are already back in session, and the Decatur School District opens its doors next week. Big Brother Pat Corrigan and his little Gabe Wright, 10, played a game in which one would toss the other a tennis ball from the sidelines while the other tried to catch it after jumping off the diving board. It's definitely the funnest event they do all year, Corrigan said. Between those yet to be matched with a bigger brother or sister, the littles, their friends, family, and their bigs, nearly 200 people attended the pool party. The agency hosts free events for bigs and their littles, what they call a pair, to build a relationship at least every other month, but it's rare that it's also open to others. It kind of gives the kids a chance to have fun and get together and be around other people, said Heather Williams, a case manager with the agency. Christian Sebet watched from the sidelines as her little 17-year-old Carissa Howell played in the pool with her friends. The two have been teamed up for more than 4 years, so while they hung out more at last year's pool party, Sebet now knew to hang back this time. She's hanging out with her friends, and she needs that right now, she said. When they meet up, they'll get something to eat, bake, or just talk about what's going on in the teenager's life. Sometimes I just sit there and listen, she said. Big Brothers Big Sisters matches at-risk children with adult members to do activities together and provide a role model. Many of the children in Big Brothers Big Sisters come from single-parent homes or live in poverty. The agency serves almost 800 at-risk children in central Illinois, but about 70 are still waiting for a match. They're always looking for new volunteers, Williams said. Southern Hospitality closes Summer Park Series. The blues is one of the most natural forms of music. Those musicians understand their style. For some, it just comes naturally. Southern Hospitality is a group of musicians whose chemistry and love of music shows on stage. The blues band will be season closer for the blues in Central Park at 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th at Central Park. The music of Southern Hospitality is deeply based in the blues, although we throw other influences in there, guitarist J.P. Soares said. The Fried Neck Bones and Home Fries is a remake of a 1950s Willie Bobo song. It has a little Latin flavor, Soares said. With their experience, the band is able to write and perform much of their own music, such as Kind Lies and Whiskey. The most recent album, Easy Livin', was released in March. When Southern Hospitality formed as a group in 2011, they didn't have any plans to perform as a band. The three original members, Fowler, Soares, and keyboardist Victor Wainwright, were all performing with other bands. One night, they were playing together at a party after a blues festival. They were approached by a member of a blues society and asked to perform at a rhythm and blues party. "We were just having fun," Fowler said, "and someone really liked it." Other blues professionals heard their sound and suggested they play at other venues. Since the shows were all in the South, they called themselves the Southern Hospitality Tour. Although the members enjoy performing together, they have their own projects. "We all have our own bands," Fowler said, "so we cover a lot of ground." The band members live in separate areas of Florida, but they found their collaboration comes natural. "It's a certain chemistry," Soares said. "We get together and go over stuff, but for the most part, it is pretty organic." Southern Hospitality is a special project for each with only 3 weeks of scheduled touring, but their tours have taken them to Norway, Czechoslovakia, Montreal, and other parts of the world. "We get around," Fowler said. "It's a special thing when we get together," Soares said. Now we have some editorials. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to a new sculpture honoring Horace G. Livingston, Jr. in Decatur's Mueller Park. Livingston was a civil rights pioneer and also the founder and publisher of The Voice, the most prominent publication for black citizens in central Illinois. Livingston, who died in 2014, was memorialized with a bas-relief sculpture created by Preston Jackson. The sculpture is placed in the pavilion at Mueller Park, which is named after Livingston. The pavilion is significant because it has hosted numerous meetings of the black community over the past 80 years. Thumbs up to the Decatur Youth Hockey Association, which received $150,000 over the weekend for improvements to the ice arena at the Decatur Civic Center. The association earned $75,000 by finishing second with the community's help in the Kraft Foods Hockeyville USA campaign. An additional $75,000 was raised in the community and presented to the Community Foundation of Macon County. The community's $75,000 was the result of a matching challenge by an anonymous donor. The money will be used for a variety of improvements at the arena, most notably new locker rooms. Retired Chicago Blackhawks and St. Louis Blues hockey player Jamal Myers attended the event announcement. Myers and Christy Niles were co-grand marshals of the Razzle Dazzle Good Times Parade on Saturday. Thumbs up to Bridge the Gap, an innovative program that helps students prepare themselves for college-level math. The program, a collaboration of Workforce Investment Solutions, Richland Community College, and the Education Coalition of Macon County, gives prospective college students a four-week math tutoring session, followed by a paid summer internship. The program reduces the amount of remedial math the students may have to take and also gives them work experience. It's also a significant collaboration between the three groups to solve a problem. Thumbs up to the Eisenhower High School Class of 1985, which used its recent 30th year reunion to honor longtime educator Ida Brooks. Brooks, who died in February, was a longtime teacher and coach in the Decatur Public Schools. The class raised money for a bench that will be dedicated in her honor at the high school. Brooks began her teaching career in 1966 at Centennial Junior High School and also taught at Johns Hill before moving to Eisenhower, where she taught physical education and coached basketball and boys' soccer. Thumbs up to a new mural in downtown Decatur that honors Mayor Mike McElroy. The mural, completed during Decatur celebration, celebrates the vision of the former mayor who died unexpectedly last month. It's a great way to honor McElroy and to remind everyone of his love for the city and downtown. Lowering expectations is not the answer. Chicago. Last week, a federal judge ruled that one of the four licensing exams that aspiring teachers in New York State must pass does not discriminate against minorities. Judge Kimba M. Wood ruled that the state and the testing company that helped devise the exam, Pearson, had properly ensured the Academic Literacy Skills Test, ALST, is representative of the content of a New York public school teacher's job. Indeed, the ALST is rigorous. It requires reading complex informational and narrative texts and then demonstrating through both multiple choice and written responses the ability to determine what a text says explicitly and consistently makes logical inferences and draw conclusions based on evidence found in the text. The reading materials are challenging, but these should be doable for college graduates. Sample practice questions provided in the extensive multimedia online learning guide include texts like Should Congress Reassess the Renewable Fuel Standard in the Energy Independence and Security Act? And The Age of the Unthinkable, Why the New World Disorder Constantly Surprises Us and What We Can Do About It. And the performance standards they assessed are basic. They are quite similar to learning standards for reading for K-12 under old curricular guidelines and certainly reflect new Common Core learning standards, which put a heavy emphasis on literacy. It's reasonable to expect that those tasked with teaching students how to read make logical inferences and then write about what they're absorbed and should be expected to demonstrate these same abilities themselves as college graduates. Obviously, you would also want a teacher to have a rock-solid foundation in his or her subject area, have a deep understanding of the special needs of diverse student populations, be able to improve student achievement, that is what the other three New York licensing exams assess, but being able to read a given text and display comprehension is undoubtedly fundamental. Yet many people insist that teacher licensing tests are discriminatory simply because minorities pass them at lower rates. To illustrate, the New York Times recently reported that a well-known math and science educator, Alfred S. Possementier, did not consider the test to be a strong indicator of who would be a good teacher, and that his Hispanic faculty members in particular said they found the test to be discriminatory. Students at Mercy College, where until recently he was a dean, passed the test at a lower rate than the statewide average. Possementier said that while it was important to be a clear, literate communicator, the ALST measures how eloquent a person is in the English language. The question is that one of the criterion for determining who will be a good teacher, he said. My sense is that the answer is no. Shocked, I contacted Possementier, who has been a dean at City College of New York. He told me his comments were misrepresented. If you're going to ensure that the teaching profession is fulfilled by properly literate people who can read and write well, there should be at least that test that does so, but does not prejudice against people who are non-scientifically minded. Possementier said, noting he felt that the sample question he'd seen were too technical in nature for non-science or math majors. You have to define what kind of literacy you expect from teachers, then create a test to match up to that level of literacy. That's regardless of their race or language. This is a far cry from saying that the ability to use language clearly and effectively is not a bare minimum for being allowed into a classroom. The truth is that Black and Hispanic children in this country are disproportionately taught by less experienced, lower-paid teachers, and research has found that white teachers, who make up over 80% of the teacher corps, expect less of Black and Hispanic students. Under no circumstances must we expect less of our minority students or our minority teachers. If we seek to lower the bar because of a perception that teacher licensing tests are too hard for minority teachers, we will continue to perpetuate separate and unequal education on minorities in this country. Instead of simply getting upset about minorities' inability to pass challenging exams, we must focus on expecting and helping them to attain academic achievement on par with whites. Kane applauds for Celebration's audiences. Does Decatur Celebration have the country's friendliest and most accepting audiences? One can make a case for it. Consider the hundreds of acts that have found their way to Celebration stages since the event's 1986 launch. There are at best a handful who have earned our wrath. Taylor Dane and Chuck Negron are more reviled than most past Celebration performers. Why? Largely because they were simply rude on stage. During the 2000 performance at Celebration, Dane blasted the city of Decatur, the Celebration itself, and those attending her show, at one point suggesting they needed to live in another city. Former Three Dog Night singer Chuck Negron in 1997 spent most of his time looking at a watch. He certainly didn't give the impression his show was something he was doing for anything more than a paycheck. And his reputation dimmed further when reports later came to light that he treated a number of Celebration volunteers as though they were his indentured servants. War showed up late in 2007 without explanation, and at the time their set was supposed to begin, they went through a long, laborious, and almost contemptuous sound check. And while Don McLean was musically wonderful, his lectures about publishing, his audience, and the miserable state of popular music in 1991 left a lot to be desired. If over three decades there is truly just a trio of troubling troubadours, that's as reasonable a percentage for which one can ask. Much of that has to do with Decatur audiences. We're largely appreciative, and the performers can sense that and are often inclined to give back a little extra. There are bands played side stages 15 years ago who still use pictures of Decatur Celebration on their websites and in their promotions. From many stages, even a smattering of people covering the area of a block looks huge, so imagine if yours are packed in even a little bit, and how astonishing that looks from a stage. Certainly headliners have played for larger crowds from what they have seen in Illinois from the show stage at Celebration. My count shows in excess of a dozen have played stadium shows. This has been Mary Mortland reading part one of the Decatur Herald for August 14, 2015. Stay tuned for part two, beginning with the obituaries.